What's news from the Wall Street Journal? Top stories and timely insights.
I'm Charlie Turner in New York. Those Russian-linked accounts on Facebook reportedly went beyond just placing ads on the site to organizing events tied to hot-button issues. We'll have more on this in a moment. First, some top stories. The Russian influence on social media has caught the eye of Congress. This week, executives from Facebook, Twitter, and Google parent Alphabet are on Capitol Hill answering questions about Russian-linked activity on their sites. Fed policymakers meet Tuesday and Wednesday. No changes to monetary policy are expected, but the statement at the conclusion of the meeting will be closely watched for clues on whether policymakers intend to go ahead with a widely expected December increase in interest rates. On Tuesday's economic calendar, we have the third quarter employment cost index, the Case-Shiller home price index for August, the Chicago Purchasing Managers Index for October, and the Conference Board's October Consumer Confidence Index. On the earnings schedule for Halloween, companies scaring up some results include Pfizer, Aetna, Electronic Arts, Kellogg, MasterCard, Royal Caribbean, and Under Armour. Sources say Japan's SoftBank is abandoning its efforts to merge Sprint with T-Mobile US. SoftBank, which controls more than 80% of Sprint, has been in negotiations for months with T-Mobile's parent Deutsche Telekom about combining the two U.S. cellular providers. The two sides were discussing an all-stock deal that would have given Deutsche Telekom control over the combined company. Over the weekend, SoftBank's board met in Japan and expressed concern about giving up control. Instead of a merger, Sprint reportedly plans to make a significant investment in its network. Next up, some of those events you might have seen promoted on Facebook were financed by Russian-backed accounts. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening, everyone. This week, executives from Facebook, Google, and Twitter are scheduled to appear before Congress to answer questions about Russian activity found on their platforms. It's part of congressional probes into alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election. Well, now the Wall Street Journal says workers behind Russian-based Facebook accounts helped organize or finance real-life events before and after the 2016 election, often working directly with U.S. activists and playing both sides of polarizing issues. Joining us from San Francisco with a story is Wall Street Journal reporter Deepa Seetharaman. Deepa, we've previously heard about the 3,000 ads bought by Russian-linked accounts, but now apparently they've gone beyond that to actually organizing events in the U.S.?
Yes. One of the things that's very interesting, as we try to understand the scope of the Russian activity on Facebook, there are a couple of distinct categories. There are ads that Facebook talked about a couple months ago. There's organic content, which Facebook plans to discuss at the hearings. And within that, there are events. And these were attempts to organize real-world gatherings of people, marches, rallies, protests around the country.
What was the purpose of this? To capitalize on the emotionally charged atmosphere to try to destabilize the U.S. political system?
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, in talking to experts in Russian propaganda, one of the things you hear is that their view is that protests, marches, et cetera, are fundamentally destabilizing to American democracy. So this was part of that broader effort. I mean, if you look at the posts and the ads themselves, they were also similarly divisive. So this carries out that strategy. And the idea is to exploit and inflame social and racial tensions that were already percolating in the U.S. And they did so partly through these events, which were, interestingly enough, played to both sides of an issue. We found about 60 events that were posted on Facebook from eight of these accounts that we know to be Russian-linked. And the events themselves promote causes that, run across the spectrum.
What kind of events? Give me some specific events and the causes they promoted.
Sure. So, we know that on July 10th, one of the pages, we saw two very different events from two separate pages. One was a Blue Lives Matter rally that in Texas, that was to commemorate the five police officers who had been killed the previous week in Dallas. And we know that that same day, a different Facebook page scheduled an event that was a protest for Philando Castile, and it was to protest his killing that previous week by a police officer in Minnesota. And so, you know, this is two sides of an issue. There's a Blue Lives Matter rally and a Black Lives Matter rally, and they're being sort of organized and planned for the same day. And we saw pro-Donald Trump rallies and anti-Donald Trump rallies. We see certain events that were flagged as, you know, defeat radical Islam or stop the Islamization of Texas, and then other pages that were promoting, you know, safe space for Muslim Americans. So take an issue, and there seems to be an event that would correspond to either side.
Well, a couple questions here. Number one, did all the events happen? Were they well attended?
We have evidence about two dozen of them actually did happen. A handful of them were canceled. It's a little unclear, but there's still a lot of information we don't have on whether, you know, all these events happened. But, you know, in some cases you saw a few hundred people show up, but in most cases it sounds like a couple dozen. You know, in Texas, the Stop Islamization of Texas rally drew about 10 to a dozen protesters and then 60-some counter-protesters, which is interesting, which we don't appear to be Russian-tied. And then there are other places where this number comes up a lot. It's a couple dozen to a couple dozen different attendees. So you can't say that these are huge events, but they're notable because of their intent and what they tried to do and how they kind of snuck up on people.
And these posts also worked with, I guess, prominent U.S. activists. Were these activists pressured into doing this? Did they say no?
I know, it's interesting. These Russian pages, in some cases, would reach out to activists. In other cases, activists would reach out to them because they would notice these pages as having enormous social media followings and, you know, wanted to seek out advice or seek out support or help. And so I talked to a couple activists who received funding, you know, in the form of either, you know, a page will pay for a train ticket or a plane ticket, or they'll pay for signs that are or placards that are being carried at a particular event. And the sums are fairly modest, but they covered the expenses of the actual event. And then activists themselves, it's interesting. I talked to a lot of people who felt grateful for the support and they believed in some of the causes that these pages were organizing events for. But they also felt this pressure sometimes to create events that would cause a stir. So we spoke to one particular activist in D.C. who was invited to speak at a rally held by the United Muslims of America, which was one of the Russia-backed Facebook pages. And he was all for it. He was ready to go until he saw the placards, which the page had sent over to him. And he felt like they were overly incendiary. He pushed back and he said, hey, can we maybe try some more inclusive messages? Because some of this stuff is a little provocative. And, you know, after a little back and forth, they said, no, this is what we're going to go with. And, you know, he backed out of the event. So these are like little moments where the activists did push back. You know, I heard different variations of this story in the course of reporting, and it's striking because it seemed like these pages really wanted attention. You know, news coverage was highly coveted, and they really wanted people to look.
It seems like it'll be interesting to see if there are any discussions between lawmakers and social media executives when they appear on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, this just broke, I mean, just minutes ago, but Facebook in its testimony plans to say that an estimated 126 million people saw Russian content from these accounts.
Wow.
This is over a 2.5-year period, and it means that 126 million people may have seen at least one post from these pages over this time, which is a far greater number than, you know, than the company had previously disclosed. And as part of that, you look at, you know, as part of that content are these events, and it's just very striking the scope and the scale of this operation.
Wall Street Journal reporter Deepa Seetharaman joining us from San Francisco. Thanks a lot, Deepa.
Thank you.
And finally, a cautionary tale. An Apple engineer apparently learned the hard way that the tech giant takes product leaks very seriously after he was reportedly fired over a YouTube video posted by his daughter that featured the upcoming iPhone X. In a tearful video posted Saturday, Brooke Peterson said her dad lost his job after he let her take video of the new iPhone X. In an earlier YouTube video that quickly went viral last week, Peterson recorded herself visiting Apple's Cupertino, California campus where her father worked. In that video, he's seen handing her his phone, and she spends about 45 seconds checking out features of the highly anticipated new iPhone X. Apple forbids unauthorized filming on its campus and is notoriously strict against leaks of unreleased products, employing a giant security team that includes former members of the FBI and National Security Agency. And that's what's news. I'm Charlie Turner at the Wall Street Journal.
Spend time with Alexa? Then make What's News part of your flash briefing on the Amazon Echo, The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.